Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday morning after on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a stacked show for you today for music and arts and culture. The first interview is with funkadelic band Skinny Bros with Paul and Christopher Cognello. The second interview is with James Hughes of the Old Brewery Mission about their new alcohol management program. And third, we'll speak with Sam Kaiser about his music. Let's start the day off with a song.
I see
At the very beginning of 2011, brothers Paul and Christopher Cognello had an impromptu funk-drenched recording session that led to the creation of Skinny Bros. Over the next 10 years, the Cognello brothers built a staggering catalog of music, released 3 full-length albums and 5 EPs, and worked on numerous other projects, including performing as the house band on the MATV series The Street Speaks and scoring the feature documentary Clay vs. Clay. Their new album, The Beginning and the End, comprises songs that emerged from that initial recording session in 2011, as well as pieces written in homage to the many influences that helped shape their signature grit and grace aesthetic. With us today, we have Paul and Christopher Cognello of Skinny Bros. Hi, Paul and Christopher, and welcome to the show.
Hello.
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you became Skinny Brothers.
Well, my name is Paul Cognello, and we've just always been Skinny Bros since we were children. We started playing music together at such a young age that I think we just weren't releasing the music, but we've always been making music together.
Hi, I'm Christopher Cognello. I'm the younger Skinny Bro. And exactly as Paul said, we've been skinny all our lives, and we've been brothers all our lives, and we've been making a lot of music. I think the first time that I can remember having a session with Paul, I was probably about 4 or 5 years old, and it was recorded, and I bet you Paul still has that recording.
I do have it.
But we only began releasing music together as Skinny Bros, I guess, in about 2012, I think.
You've recently released an album called The Beginning and the End. What went into making this album?
The album has been in the works for maybe the better part of 10 years. It's music that was a little bit off center for us. it didn't necessarily fit inside any of the other or in any of the other projects that we had worked on. But we knew that this music had to come out, and we would just keep working on it and working on it in between other projects. It became almost like a pet project of ours. It became something that I guess just was something that we wanted to complete, but didn't necessarily know when it would get done.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is, like, we're very productive people when we're together. We record a lot. And it's funny because when you make a lot of music, you're constantly thinking of, when you put an album together, you're curating something. And this time around, we took all little things that were really, really good, but didn't fit into our curated past, you know? And I mean, I always like to say that, like, I always tend to say that, oh, this is our best record. But I actually think that it's funny to say, but like taking these little odd ends and little bits and ideas of songs that were really great actually might be our best record.
May we listen to some of your music?
Oh, yes, of course.
This is Trouble on the Wednesday Morning After.
Thank you.
staggering catalog of music. Tell us about your recording history.
Okay, well, actually, we started recording, when we started recording was like, I mean, like as children, I bought a four track and it was a Tascam four track and we started recording on this Tascam four track. So we have recordings going back to our teenagehood and early teenagehood and late childhood from recording on a four track, which I learned how to record just in general on that thing. But we actually started recording when I didn't even have a studio yet. Now I do have a studio, but we started recording in my living room and I just took the mics that I had, which were kind of decent, and set them up in my living room, to the chagrin of my wife, who, you know, had to crawl over microphone stands and wires all the time. But that's it. We were recording in my living room. That's how that process started. Now we have a studio and everything's great, but
you know, actually, with the recording in the living room, what's funny is that the first, I guess, couple of albums were almost entirely recorded inside that living room as well. So you got to imagine we were bringing in Coral Egan and Sarah MK and Chris Velen. These are just fantastic Montreal artists, and Busty and the Bass bringing them in to do a horn session, and Alan Prater and Freddie V. And they were all inside that living room tracking their vocals or their horn parts. It was just insane.
We had James DeSalvio come in from LA. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to come in on the session. And I just bring him into my living room. it was sort of ridiculous.
That was a fun session.
Yeah, it worked though.
You have a song called My Baby Go Fe Dodo. What is the story behind this song?
This is on an album called Party Gras. So it's really paying homage to the sort of New Orleans funk influence that we have, and that has influenced us both a lot. So, you know, it has that like Alan Toussaint production style and the meters kind of musically speaking. But the lyrics is actually something that I wrote, a poem that I wrote about having a child, like, because I have a solo career too, and I was doing a lot of touring and I was spending a lot of time overseas. So I was in Europe all the time. And I remember coming back and my son was super young. And I loved seeing him, but also I was, you know, I have like 3 days between touring and I'm like, I'm there with my wife and this is our only 3 days together as well. So I remember I wrote this song sort of just saying like, I love you, but please, Fedo, don't like go to sleep right now. I have like, you know, I have to have some alone time with this other person that I love him as well. So it's funny because it's got this sort of like, you know, cheeky sort of like, it is a song slightly about being intimate with the person you love, but it's also a song to your child, which is like, you know, please go to sleep. You know, and it was one of those times when kids just don't go to sleep easy. So it's like you're pleading with the child, like, just please go to sleep. That was the idea.
On the musical end, we managed to, I guess, I don't remember how we decided on the particular vocalists, for instance, but it was a really nice matchup because Freddie V, younger R&B vocalist, a Montreal guy, I think he was originally born in Washington, and then Washington, D.C., that is. And then Alan Prater, a much older guy, like a veteran of the Montreal R&B scene. He, I think, might be originally from Atlanta, Georgia, or somewhere around there. In any case, two American guys, they represent sort of the same genre, but a different spectrum, or like different points on the spectrum. One of them, Alan Prater, this older legend with a really like raspy, like voice that just sounds like he's been through a lot. And then Freddie, this younger guy with a smoother tone. And it was really nice to put them together. I think that they both captured the essence of those lyrics and it really came together quite nicely. And then bringing in Busty in the bass horn section on that one as well, which was really great. They've been friends of ours and regular collaborators with us. And it was just nice to be able to put together a really sort of large team of people for that song. It was nice.
May we hear some more of your music?
Absolutely.
Let's get to it.
This is My Baby Go Fe Dodo on CKUT. How do you plan to celebrate the release of The Beginning and the End?
I mean, Paul and I don't really celebrate much, I think. We just usually, our celebrations are getting back to work. I mean, really, funny enough, the album, even though it had been worked on for about 10 years, literally, the decision to finally bring it to the finish line happened during a hangout session with Paul. I now live in Toronto, and I came to visit Montreal over the winter holiday season there last year. And Paul and I have a little, I guess, like a tradition of going to this dive bar in NDG and just hanging out around sometime around, I don't know, December 25, maybe something like that. And and yeah, we just decided right then and there, you know what, let's do it. I think it's done. There's a couple of, you know, final little touches to put on the album, but I think this is it. I think it's ready to go. So in a way, the album was decided to be released in a sort of celebratory manner, just meeting together at the end of the year. And who knows, maybe we'll do that again this year, probably not in person, but maybe we'll set up some kind of Zoom thing and, you know, get a couple of bottles of, I don't know, vodka for my brother, maybe for myself, tequila. And then we'll just say, hey, good on you. Congrats.
But there will be no launch, because we're not going to get, you know, 100 people, 200 people together for this thing. It's not the time for that kind of thing. But, no. You know, it doesn't mean the work's got to stop, and it doesn't mean that people can't enjoy our music. So unfortunately, no launch this time.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
The best is to go to Bandcamp. If you're if you have access to Bandcamp, well, you do have access to Bandcamp, just pick up our music there. I think it's Bandcamp or skinnybros.bandcamp.com. You can also go to our website, skinnybros.com. There should be links to all the different avenues or ways of accessing our music through Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff. We also have a bunch of videos on YouTube. We got some really nice stuff there, goodies for everybody. So you can check us out.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Sheila.
You've been listening to Paul and Christopher Cognello of Skinny Bros speaking about their music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando. The Old Brewery Mission in the heart of Montreal is launching a brand new alcohol consumption control program this year called the Managed Alcohol Program at the Old Brewery Mission. The new program hopes to serve the most vulnerable members of society, including those who are homeless and those often refused shelters due to their chronic drinking. With us today, we have James Hughes, President and CEO of the Old Brewery Mission. Hi, James, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in the Old Brewery Mission.
So I am the president and CEO of the Old Brewery Mission, which is, as many Montrealers know, and a very old organization connected with this city since 1889. So we're over 130 years old. I was actually the director general of the Old Brewery Mission from 2004 to 2008. And then I left to go and run a government department in New Brunswick and returned and joined a family foundation. And when my successor at the Old Brewery Mission, Matthew Pierce, retired, I was invited to consider rejoining the organization. So after interviews and quite a long process, we agreed that I would come back and serve in the role of president. So I'm so honored to be leading this organization going forward, including leading the implementation of the Managed Alcohol Program.
Please explain the purpose of the new Managed Alcohol Program at the Old Brewery Mission.
Okay, so this has been a program that the City of Montreal advocates for vulnerable people living on the street have been seeking for a very long time. A managed alcohol program exists in many Canadian cities, Ottawa, Edmonton, Toronto, Vancouver, but we've never had one here in Montreal, despite the calls for putting into place such an initiative. And finally, and we're very, very thankful to have been able to partner with the Ministry of Health here in Montreal, the CIUS Centre Sud, to finally launch this initiative on a pilot basis. It'll begin January 1st up at the Royal Victoria Hospital in the Ross Pavilion, where there'll be 10 places for men and 3 places for women. People who, as you said in your introduction, who have chronic drinking problems, who have a great difficulty managing and controlling their alcohol consumption. And as we all know, that is incredibly dangerous for them and dangerous for the people around them. These are individuals who consume a lot of public services, so emergency rooms, police, ambulance, often correctional services, often detox facilities. These are people who are really in need of the kind of support to try to drive down their consumption without necessarily trying to stop it. We needed a program that really helps them to get their drinking under control. And that is what the Managed Alcohol Program is all about.
So who will be responsible for the program?
So it's a partnership between ourselves and local Ministry of Health officials. So the Old Brewery Mission will be managing the facility itself. It'll be having its counselors and intervention workers on the floor. We'll be providing, you know, the meals, ensuring the facility is clean, ensuring we have psychosocial support at all time. While the Ministry of Health is providing a nurse and other medical professionals that may be required to help individuals start to bring that drinking under control. You can imagine when you start to change your behavior and start to drink less, not drink nothing, but start to drink less on a controlled basis, there's often physical and medical implications for that. And that's why we need medical professionals on the floor as well. So it's a lovely partnership. It's really the twinning of both the community capacities that we have and the medical capacities, excuse me, that they have together, trying to help this clientele get that drinking under control.
So set the scene. What will go on during the program at the Old Brewery Mission?
Okay, so it's actually, as I say, happening up on top of the mountain in the Ross Pavilion of the Royal Victoria Hospital. So it's actually not in the shelter facilities that we run down in Old Montreal and or over on de Maisonneuve Street or some of the other places that are more associated with the Old Brewery. It's actually another facility up on top of the mountain. And in terms of setting the scene, really, this is a really important point. People who are involved in the program are usually homeless people who are often refused services. And I think you mentioned that off the top as well. Because of that behavior that they display, because it's really difficult for them to control their drinking, we often are forced to refuse them entry into the building because we have staff and other clients in there. And so they're often referred to other places, the emergency rooms or other places, but often they end up on a park bench, they end up in a park, they end up getting hit by a car. This is the kind of problem that we're trying to address through this program. So when that person finally gets to the point of saying, okay, I am ready to try to get control of this. So it's voluntary. It's an important point. It's a voluntary program. We're finally going to have a place to invite them into. In the past, we didn't. And this is one of the really most exciting parts of this entire program, is that finally we're adapting services to the clients and not expecting the clients to have to adapt and comply and conform with existing rules in existing facilities. So it's lovely to be able to adapt our services, adapt our offering to the clientele and meet them where they are. And so, yeah, so it'll be interesting. So folks who come into the program up on top of the mountain, they'll be offered a regular dose, if you will, of alcohol on a very scheduled basis, depending upon their needs, depending on where they are. And so instead of all the binge drinking that is so dangerous, and you can just think about within an hour drinking, you know, a bottle or two of wine or drinking other types of substances that have alcohol in it, or beer or other types of things, mouthwash we see a lot. These individuals will instead be given, for instance, 5 or 6 ounces of wine on the hour. So in fact, they'll be given a dose of alcohol on that schedule. So they'll be getting, you know, into their physical system the kind of substance that they need, that their body is expecting, but a lot less of it, but on a controlled, systematic basis. So what does that do? And we've seen this succeed in many other cities, is individuals start to finally, and sometimes this takes a few weeks, start to get under control. The cravings stop because they're still getting a small dose. It's a form of harm reduction. So we're reducing the risk of harm as they're taking this amount of alcohol on this regularized basis. We can start to finally have a conversation with them. We can start to finally figure out who they are, where they've come from, what their needs are, what their aspirations are. We can start to finally work with them and plan with them for a better path forward. Now, it's not going to work with everybody. We've seen that as well. This is not a panacea, but it works for most people in terms of getting them organized for the next step into permanent housing, the next step into community, the next step, sometimes even reconnecting with family and friends that they've lost because of their chronic drinking problems. So, I mean, that's a mouthful, but essentially that's the way it's going to work for those 13 people up on top of the mountain and what our hopes and objectives are for them as they go through the program.
What are the requirements to be accepted to the program?
So it's an excellent question. The requirements are really that the individuals are voluntarily wanting to participate. And this is not just Old Brewery Mission clients. Just to be clear, this is a program for all Montrealers who are facing this this type of need to have a controlled space to try to get their drinking into line, so they can be referred to. And then that has to be it has to be a referral from an agency that has spotted someone with this profile. And so we'll work very closely with the other large organizations serving this clientele. We'll work very closely with public institutions, the hospitals, the police, and so on. And we will ensure that there's a protocol to get them up the mountain and into the program safely, installed, welcomed, and then, you know, immediately engaged in trying to build a plan that can get their lives into order and into control.
What kinds of social support does the program offer?
So the most important ones are the ones I mentioned before. So on the health side, there'll be a nurse available during the day to make sure that the individual has the kind of support they need as their bodies and minds are adjusting to having less alcohol in them. That often is a very difficult process. So it'll be wonderful to have the help of a trained professional on site to provide that clinical care. But that alone doesn't work. And nor alone does just psychosocial intervention work. And this is what the Old Brewery Mission offers. We offer counseling and intervention that really tries to work on a case management basis with the individual, really starting to build the profile of where they've come from, who they are, what their social circle is. While they think often that it's entirely vanished, that's not always true. And we try to start to help build some new links for them, start to try to help identify opportunities for housing. That's incredibly important to heal. You can't heal in a shelter very easily. You can't heal on the street probably at all. So the last thing we want to do at the end of this program is that they get referred back to the street or the shelter. That is not a success. That's a failure. So we're trying to work with them, and that's what we're good at. The Old Brewery Mission is really, really good. And we're not the only ones really good at this, but we're very, very good at taking these people from where they are and try to work with them on a plan to get them housed. 93% of the individuals we work with in general coming through our homeless organization.
What does the future look like once a participant is accepted?
So their immediate future is obviously they're in the safety and the comfort of the managed alcohol program within the four walls of the Royal Victoria Hospital. That's a great start. So they're in safety. The second part of their immediate future is that they're going to be linked to both intervention and healthcare workers so that together they can start to build the plan to get them in control of their drinking and in control of their lives to the extent possible. And then the more medium to longer term part of the program is the planning about what comes next. And that's the most exciting part because essentially we're working to get them out of homelessness and get to a place where wherever they go, they'll be in control of their drinking still. And that may mean ongoing support for them. So we offer at the Old Brewery home support services, and we'll be sure to make sure that that's available to them as they go into the next step of their lives. And that's really the most exciting future that we can imagine, is one that is free of homelessness and where they're in control of their alcohol consumption.
Where can our listeners look if they want more information on the Old Brewery Mission or any of its programs?
So oldbrewerymission.ca, missionoldbrewery.ca is our website. We're very proud of the website. It's rich in materials, and we invite your listeners to check it out if they have time.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to James Hughes speaking about the Old Brewery Mission's latest alcohol consumption program. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cocky-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up. Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. The same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Sir, in the morning.
Bike made of bacon and eggs
in the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Sam Kaiser is a 20-year-old singer-songwriter from Hong Kong who now splits his time between there and Kingston, Ontario. His approach to music has always been multifaceted, reflective of his mixed heritage and upbringing across the world. He explores themes of love, longing, and hope while acknowledging growth and his own personal perception of the world around him. With us today, we have Sam Kaiser. Hi, Sam, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a musician.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Sam. That was a great intro there, by the way. But yeah, I'm a 20-year-old singer-songwriter from Hong Kong. I spend most of my time in Kingston now because I'm a student here. How I became a musician, well, really, I grew up around tons of music. My parents were great influencers in that way. My dad really, really showed me some of the great songwriters, and I really resonated with them, especially Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen. And I just remember just wanting to make music like that, which was a bit strange coming out of like a 12-year-old's mouth, I think. So I really resonated with those songwriters. And I really loved singing from a young age, and I taught myself guitar when I was about 12 or 13. And from there, I really enjoyed just kind of fiddling around, and I didn't really do too much. I wrote some like pretty not so great songs. But when I was about 16, I wrote a song called Old Stars that to me sounded like a good song, honestly. So and I put it online, and people started to listen to it and tell me how much they liked it. So I thought, you know, if I could do that again or something like it again, then that'd be pretty good. And I guess that's where I'm at now.
You've got a new single out called Good Things. Why did you write this song?
Yeah, so Good Things. So I wrote that when I was actually in quarantine. So I was coming back from Hong Kong this summer, and I'd spent 2 weeks in Toronto by myself in a hotel room because they didn't let me come to Kingston right away. So I was in Toronto. I was by myself. I couldn't go outside. I was very sad, and I was just saying, this moment really sucks. Like, why do all the good things have to go away? Like, why can't these good things like stay? Why can't we have good days every day? All these ideas. But then as I was writing those thoughts down, I was kind of thinking like, oh, well, the most beautiful moments, you know, like the most beautiful things that happen to us are only so beautiful, or we remember them as being so beautiful, because they're so fast and they don't have a chance to go sour. Because I think everything has a chance to go bad, right? And but those most beautiful, beautiful moments, they're so beautiful because they're so fleeting. And that was kind of like the idea that really stuck with me and what I wanted to make the song reflect.
May we hear some of your music?
Of course.
This is Good Things on CKUT.
Why do all the good things have to end? Buy another ticket, some pocket change to spend. Clean out the apartment, find another friend. Oh, why do all the good things have to end? Why do all the good days go away? Don't go to bed so early, but don't stay up too late. I'd like to tell you something, a dream I'd like to stay. Oh, why can't we have good days every day? Are they following the raindrops dancing down the road? Are we all stuck in the middle? Hit pause on the remote. Oh, I wonder where the moments really go. Oh, I wonder where the moments really go.
What are you doing to celebrate your current release, Good Things?
That's a good question. There isn't a lot. Well, I mean, you can do a lot of things now, I suppose, but you know, there's no big release parties or can't really go out with your friends as much, but I've been able to spend lots of quality time with friends here, safely, of course. I've been doing a lot of Zoom calls back to my family to just like share good news. And like, they've been telling me, oh, my friend heard you on the radio, like, and just kind of like enjoying these good things that I'm hearing. And yeah, I think I had a couple of drinks the night the song came out. But yeah, besides that, not too much.
Let's talk about your upcoming projects. What are you planning in the near future?
Yeah, for sure. So Good Things is the first single off of an EP coming out in January. It's currently untitled. I'm working on some titles. But yeah, I'll be out in January. So I'm working on three more songs for that. And yeah, I'm really excited for everybody to hear them. I'm also working on a bunch of visual content with a buddy of mine who's a great filmmaker. His name's Kieran Turnbull. Shout out to him. But we did a lyric video for Good Things, which is up on YouTube. And we've done a music video for an older song of mine called Stay the Night. And we're working on more music videos for the EP release in January. So stay tuned.
Maybe hear some more of your music?
Yeah, for sure.
This is Halfway Love on the Wednesday Morning After. Thank you. If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
Well, my music's on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, Tidal, anywhere. It's also on SoundCloud if you'd like to find me there. And I have a Bandcamp page as well. It's just samkaiser.bandcamp.com if you want to support me a little bit more directly. And like I said before, I'm on YouTube as well with a couple of videos on there too.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Sam Kaiser speaking about his latest single, Good Things, and his upcoming projects. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Thank you. Sound.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
The COVID-19 pandemic in Canada is serious. We must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at canada.ca/coronavirus or 1-833-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
New York, this is Democracy Now!
Our country is going hungry on the week before Thanksgiving and the Senate broke. I don't care what party you are. It is an abandonment of our responsibilities.
With some 54 million Americans going hungry, food lines stretching for miles are seen across the country. We'll speak to Raj Patel, author of Stuffed and Starved, The Hidden Battle for the World's Food System. Then, a betting pool? That's what managers at a Tyson pork slaughterhouse set up to bet on how many workers would get COVID. Six workers died at the Iowa plant. More than 1,000 were infected. Finally, 2020 has become the deadliest year on record for transgender and gender nonconforming people. We'll speak to Tory Cooper of Human Rights Campaign.
Has made it just an incredibly toxic soup of violence and all of these different things that make trans lives seem devalued.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Trump administration's cleared the way for President-elect Joe